The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Katie.
Hi, I'm Katie and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 10, 2013. Stella's my sponsor. I'm a member of AG, and I'm working the steps for the second time. We're on step 9. I want to thank Rachel for asking me to speak. I'm very honored to be here, and thank you, Peggy, for this group. I started coming to AG last May, and prior I had been going to meetings mostly in Brooklyn. I dabbled in meetings in Tribeca, the Greenwich Village group, and I bounced around. And I found that I yearned for more. And the first time I came into this room, I felt something, you know? And one of the things that I wanted to say is that certain language has changed for me in sobriety. Two words in particular, God and alcoholic. When I was a child, I was in one play my whole life. My mom loves to tell the story that it was a Christmas play, and the curtains opened. I was 5, and I was crouched in the front with my hands over my face the entire time. I played softball for one season, and the entire season, I'd get up to bat, and I wouldn't swing. I had intense fear of being looked at, of being seen. And when I first had alcohol, the first time I tasted it, I'm a third generation alcoholic, my dad would give us sips, my sister and I, sips of beer in beer caps. And I remember the first time I tasted beer, I was probably 7. We were at a park. It wasn't until years later it hit me that a normal father doesn't drive around with a case of Bud in the trunk. I tasted that beer, and I didn't like it. It was bitter, it was cold, it kind of stung my throat. And I grew up, my parents divorced, I grew up being told, you are going to be an alcoholic, you have to be very, very careful. So that word carried an immense amount of weight for me, and it carried fear. My grandfather died of alcoholism, my other grandfather was an alcoholic. My father, maybe drinking, maybe not. I haven't seen him since 2001. So the word alcoholic struck fear into me. So I didn't drink again until I was probably 16. And at that point, you know, I went to a high school where, you know, the smart kids were boring and the other kids were cool and fun. So I was a smart kid for a while, and then I decided I was going to stop studying and just slide by. And I would drink in parks, and I remember the first time I went to get a beer, I'll date myself a little bit. I got sober just at the tail end of 35, and I'm 40 now, which I can't believe. But I chalked my license. This is something we used to do that you can't do anymore. And I went, and we bought beer, and I remember getting this Heineken at 16, going to a park in Queens, and chugging it. Right? Because I'm not there to drink it slow. I'm not enjoying it. I wanted to get drunk. And that's what I did. And, you know, a big part of my drinking, like all of us, was for many years fun. Did I have consequences? Right away. Early on, you know, peeing in public, climbing up. I always date myself climbing up. I had a bunk bed. And I remember climbing up my bunk bed, having to turn around and throw up immediately. I was a kid. So that continued throughout my 20s. I graduated high school. I went to college. When I was in college, I was one of these people who I felt like I have to watch my drinking. I know I could have a problem. You know, I could feel it. And I wanted to be a straight-A student. I was. I, like, really pushed myself. In between, I dabbled, right? So I had my moments where I got drunk. I had to be carried out of places. It was never drinking for pleasure. Never. And that little girl who didn't want to be looked at had now had the opportunity to be seen without having to feel all those feelings. So that continued into my 20s, and I started to have questions that I might have a problem when I was in, I think I turned 30. And I went to a doctor, and they were like, I think you're okay, just try to moderate. Anyway, fast forward, I dated a late-stage alcoholic, which to me was the best thing ever, because there was a lot of alcohol that was provided to me, and that led me to my bottom. When I went to my first AA meeting, I had been going to Al-Anon, because he was the problem, for several years, and when I went to my first AA meeting, I remember the feeling I felt was immediate identification and then anger. Because that was the word I did not want to be, an alcoholic. And what's happened to me since in recovery, working the steps, reading the big book, coming to these rooms, speaking to other alcoholics, saying my truth out loud and seeing people nod back, has been an immense, incredible experience. And to today, the word alcoholic no longer is, for me, holds shame because it's associated with recovery. Because I'm an alcoholic in recovery, working the steps and taking actions. And it's not perfect, but we are not alone. And that's something that's amazing. And one thing I'll say about God is that when I first got sober, I grew up very religious. I had a hard time with the word God because my God was a God of punishment. My God was a God that didn't accept people that were different, that didn't, you know, believe in abortion, that didn't all of these things. And I couldn't say amen when I first got sober because that related too much to my God. So I used to say ashe, which is something that there's tribes in Africa that when they pray to the universe and they say ashe. So I said ashe until I came to AG. And the first time we said the Lord's Prayer, I came here in last May, I didn't say it. I held hands, I didn't say it. A couple of months go by, last July at this time, I was saying the Lord's Prayer. One of the things I've heard in meetings is we hold hands to be reminded we're not alone, and I had a spiritual experience. Because the God, my God, the God of AA, doesn't judge. It's a loving God. It's a God of compassion. It's a God of forgiveness. And that God is here in these rooms, in any room of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I feel so blessed to be having this reinvention of the self because life isn't perfect. And I mean, I hit a financial bottom in recovery. You know, I had more money when I was drinking than I do now. People said, how did that happen? I was like, I drank for free. You know, what can I say? But today I have tools. I have a toolbox that's overflowing with solution. I can make phone calls, I read the big book, I call my sponsor, I reach out to newcomers, and all of these things allow me to function because you know what? Alcohol was with me for my first kiss. Alcohol was with me at every party. Alcohol was with me at every concert I went to. Alcohol was with me when I danced. And all of a sudden, I had to let that go. And instead, I have the program and I have people that understand what that's like. So thanks for letting me share.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Ben.
Hi, I'm Ben. I'm an alcoholic. First and foremost, I want to thank Zach for giving me the opportunity to speak tonight, for my sponsor. You know, it's a good thing I don't have to take myself too seriously because when I first came to this meeting, all I ever wanted to do was get up here and speak and show you all how cool I was and, you know, how good looking and how I had all of these things. And in reality, I was just really insecure. So I'm grateful that tonight it's about being of service, and it's not about proving anything to anybody here. You know, I have a God in my life, and that's enough for me today. My sobriety date is May 17th, 2015. A little background. I grew up in a very loving family. I gotta speak into the microphone. I grew up in a very loving family, and there was also a lot of anxiety present in the home. I got everything I needed materially. Never really wanted for much, but at the same time, never really felt like I fit in. Always felt different, was overly aware of my place in the world and other people's perceptions of me. And from a very young age, I sought to prove to people that I was worth it. And, you know, it's an emotional thing for me to talk about just because my insecurities are still with me today. I'm extremely grateful that, you know, I have a higher power in my life that helps me to be in uncomfortable situations like this. I didn't start drinking until high school, but when I got into high school, I found that substances allowed me to be in the moment. My whole life, I was chasing, you know, some sort of peace and serenity, and alcohol and dry goods allowed me to stay present with people. I didn't have to worry about, you know, what was coming up the next week, what had happened to me in the past, or how somebody was looking at me. The very first time I can remember getting drunk, my friends and I stole one of my buddy's father's cars and totaled it. And so at the age of 13, that wasn't a very good look. But there weren't any consequences. And life continued on that way for as long as I could remember. I grew up in a household where as long as I was getting good grades, playing sports, and looking a certain way, none of it really mattered. And I got away with a lot of stuff. I'm to this day a good manipulator, and I wasn't really aware of just how badly I was manipulating the people in my life in order to get what I needed and get what I wanted. And I stopped at nothing. Whatever, you know, fancied me at the time was what I was going to go after. And you know, I ended up getting into the college that I wanted to get into, and everything seemed, you know, as though it was going really well. If you were to look at me, people would say, oh, you know, I'm so happy for you. Little did they know that I'd been wearing this mask my whole life, and I had no idea who I really was, first of all, and second of all, really where I wanted to go with my life. I came back from my freshman year of school, and as I was leaving the dorms, I had a group of girls come up to me, and they said, Ben, we're really worried about you. We know that you haven't been going to class, and we know that you are really struggling academically, so if you need anything, you can come to me, or you can come to us next semester, and we'll be there to help you. And that, for me, was one of my first moments of clarity. There's a few moments of clarity throughout my sobriety. And that moment in particular really hit me. I was like, wow, they really don't know. Because at the time, my grades were still really good. But they saw through that, and they knew that there was something really fundamentally wrong with me. I came home and proceeded to really go through bouts with a mental obsession. I could not go a waking moment without thinking about drinking or drugging. And every morning I woke up and I felt like I was at that jumping off place that it talks about in the Big Book. I had reached a point where it no longer kept me in the moment. I no longer felt serene. It had ceased to work, and I really felt lost. I didn't know what to do. I contemplated suicide, but it was more for, you know, how are people going to think of me at my funeral, less for, you know, what was me actually wanting to get out of it. I'm extremely self-centered. I got very lucky that I ended up getting into a codependent relationship with a girl who had three family members in recovery. Yeah, I definitely don't recommend that if you're trying to stay out there. That didn't work very well. And it was exactly what I needed. God did for me what I could not do for myself. And you know, to this day, I fundamentally don't know what's best for me, but I really believe that my higher power was doing something for me in that moment that I was fundamentally incapable of doing. I went to my first AA meeting that summer and walked in. It was an 11-step meeting, and I was like, wow, these people really have a problem with God. And I was like, you know, I don't have a problem with God. God just doesn't exist. I grew up in a household where it was you were either religious or intelligent, and that was how, you know, I carried myself my whole life. But after doing some reflecting and being prodded, I was like, yeah, I have a problem with God. And yeah, one of this girl's older brother came up to me and he was like, how free do you want to be? And yeah, that ruined my drinking from there on out. I knew I was done. And yeah, May 17th of 2015, I came in to the rooms wholeheartedly. I'd been coming to the rooms for 60 days previously, but was still drinking and counting days and lying about my day count. But yeah, I had a moment where I felt like I really had to put both feet in or all would be lost. And I can't express my gratitude. I can't articulate my gratitude the way I'd like to. I owe this program everything. Without this program, my parents would be without a child. My brother would be without a brother. I would be lost. And I had a moment a few weeks ago where a boy in my town who was 20 years old passed away from this disease. And they held a little candlelight vigil for him at the beach that I used to lifeguard at. And I got a text from my mom. And that was when it hit me that this isn't about me. You know, this is about the hundreds of people that have allowed me to be up here and to speak to all of you today. The beautiful thing about it is I'm continuing to meet people that put me in the position I am today. You know, I've been very lucky to make some amazing friends in recovery. And I think for me, that was really what kept me coming. I know early on as a beginner, I really wasn't into the step work. I was happy having a sponsor in name only, but not really doing the work. And the fellowship definitely kept me coming around, but I wouldn't recommend going without the steps or a sponsor. Again, I had another moment of clarity where a man came into my life and looked me in the eyes and said, Ben, you're going to relapse. And, you know, I kind of laughed it off, but at the same time, I knew he was 100% right. I was planning on it. I just couldn't own up to it. And without that man, I would not be, you know, who I am today. I wouldn't be able to show up for the things I'm able to show up for. And one of the best things that I've learned in recovery is that I don't have to want to do any of this. Honestly, most days, I don't really want to do any of it. But I'm willing to do all of it. And I show up for everything, whether I want to or not. And that's not to say I'm perfect by any means. You know, I'm definitely still working this program, living these steps in my everyday life. And but again, you know, I show up. And for me, that was something I was incapable of doing when I was out there. I don't necessarily know what I want from life or where I want to end up in life, but at the same time, I know if as long as it involves this program, the 12 steps, and all of you guys, that I'm going to be okay. And you know, if my mom never has to get that phone call that I'm dead in a bathroom somewhere or locked up in jail or off to rehab again, then, you know, God is good. So, thanks.
And our main speaker tonight is Paige.
Okay. Yeah. Hi, I'm just going to take a second to look at you. Thank you for my sobriety. My name is Paige. I am an alcoholic. It feels very good and very helpful to look, even when you're a stranger, because you're not a stranger. And I wish I could take this jacket off, but I'm going to respect your rules and sweat. I am very, very happy to do that for Alcoholics Anonymous. I really and truly am. I was looking at all the beautiful shoes in the shoe parade of the people that came up and did the announcements, and I thought to myself, I remembered what a fraud and what a freak I felt like when I first got sober, and I was trying to be a grown-up, and I was trying to feel like a normal human being in the world. And today, thanks to you guys and Alcoholics Anonymous and big, huge, gigantic grace of God, I have a profession. I love being in a place where I can talk about God very unapologetically. I can actually do that most anywhere. I can. It's just extra nice to be in a place where there's an infusion. An infusion. As I was listening to people do their day count, all you guys counting your days, I just kept thinking, oh my God, another life saved, another one, another one, another one. Another person's going to get to live a life, another one. So I want to do my best to talk about this paradox of God, this invisible, powerful, graceful thing that swept me up on May 23rd, 1987. So I want to talk about the invisible, mysterious power, and I want to talk about you and you and you, that you're probably older than me and you're younger than me, and how much your kindness and your love and your own personal stories and your wisdom saved my life. So it's invisible and it's very visible. And for you guys who are counting your days, you are in for such an amazing leg-trembling treat. Your program can really be designed for you the way your life was supposed to go. So for me, coming into Alcoholics Anonymous was really like walking through a secret, going through a secret, not so secret anymore, because look at this place. Walking through a secret portal into the fourth dimension. So I'm going to talk about the fourth dimension tonight. Third dimension is, you know, everything that we can see and touch. And the fourth dimension that I live because of you guys and those steps and that big blue book, the fourth dimension is available to all of us. And so I'm going to try to talk about both. And I, as I was listening to Ben and Katie, you know, stories were flashing through my mind to tell you, and then I just kept coming back to the now and listening to you guys. So I have a home group. It's called Into Action Manhattan. It's a big book step study. I go to meetings 30 years later to do service, but also because I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll be a perpetual, eternal student of this fellowship. I will never stop learning from you guys and how this gracious God speaks through you and lives through you. I'll never stop learning. I'll never stop getting filled up. And my sponsor's here with me tonight, and I just saw your smiling face, Myra, and I realized I look very serious. I look serious because I'm very enthusiastic about this, and that you are too, and that this place saved my life. It's so weird that I'm 54 and my voice sounds like I'm 13, but I am 54, and when I came in, I was a little older than you, Ben, and I remember, I'll just tell you a little bit about the last drink, and you'll get a picture of how allergic I was to alcohol. You will really get the picture, and I will keep sweating. 24 years old, really super, super allergic. I only drank for 10 years, but if I hadn't gotten 12 stepped by my blessed buddy, William, I don't know how my path would have gone. In my system, alcohol in my system turned me into a Jekyll and Hyde. I was a vicious, angry, fist-fighting, swearing alcoholic. I was also extremely sad. So I went back and forth between being grief-stricken and filled with self-pity and very angry. And I was an AAU swimmer, and I swam butterfly, and I could do some damage, unfortunately. Not that I got into fights a lot, but I acted out my emotions when alcohol was in my system. And the very first time I got drunk, Rosemary's Baby was on television. And I'm so glad there are other old people here. And if you young people haven't seen Rosemary's Baby, it's wonderful. But it was on TV, and I was babysitting, and that was my first venture into the liquor cabinet. I drank a little bit with my mischievous friend of every single thing in the cabinet. We just made a big drink, Harvey's Bristol Cream, Tanqueray, vodka, whiskey sour mix. So we drank it, and we were running and doing flips over the coffee table, and Rosemary's Baby was on the television. And I remember when the parents came home and offered me $5, and this is, I guess, back in the 70s. You got $5 for many hours of babysitting. I remember seeing two $5 bills vividly, like it was yesterday. And so I want to also talk about my consciousness and how much this program has expanded and transformed my consciousness. That was my consciousness back then. Which one should I take? I'll take that one. So I was a fall-down drunk. That night I went home and fell down my stairs, and I threw up. And like you heard from Katie and Ben, I really, 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 really liked the way alcohol made me feel. I left my body, and I felt very troubled in my body and my mind. And when I drank, I left. And I didn't know about alcoholism then. I didn't know I was going to turn into one or not turn into one. But I went on a very, very treacherous path until my friend found me. And God bless you. Bless you. The night my friend found me, I had become, by then, alcohol, with me in its grips, a pathological liar. I did not know how to tell the truth. I did not know who I was. I think Ben said something about that. I was shattered, fractured, fragmented, lost, and I woke up in the morning the night after my last drink. Actually, the night of my last drink, I had scrawled in my diary, and this is prayer. So self-examination, prayer, and meditation. I had prayed in my diary in all block scrawled letters, please, dear God, please help me. I don't want to be alive. I don't know how to live my life without hating myself and self-pity, something like that. The next morning, my tearful boyfriend was shaking me awake. My maiden name, I just realized I'm not supposed to say it. I can say it, but I'm not going to. He was calling me by my nickname, which was Brew, and it has to do with my maiden name. He was crying, and he said, Brew, get up. Get up. The detectives are here. You have to finish talking to the detectives. Oh, I forgot to tell you the most important part. 3 weeks before the detectives appeared came the wafting grace of Alcoholics Anonymous. 3 weeks before my one of the worst nights of my life, my friend William saw me drinking on a Saturday afternoon. I'm not looking at your lap. I'm just trying to see how much time I have. Can you move your hands? Oh, thank you. Okay, sorry. Some things don't change, but I keep working on it. No, I'm really just teasing, so okay. I was drinking tequila on a Saturday afternoon, and my friend William had been coming around for 90 days, and you know how it is. When someone comes to you when you're a wretch and you're just totally wretched and filled with self-loathing, it seems like they're this spiritual giant. He just was counting his days, close to 90, and he said the thing to me that maybe some of you have had said to you. He said these words to me. He said, Paige, I think you're an alcoholic. I said, where have you been, William? And he said, I've been going to AA meetings, and I'm feeling much better, and I'm really liking my life. I'm paraphrasing. He always corrects me. But he did say to me in all seriousness, I watch what happens to you. I watch you run into traffic. I watch you climb up the sides of buildings to get the Frisbee. I see your complete change. I think you're an alcoholic. And like many of us, I had a list as long as my arm, innocent and not knowing, a list as long as my arm as to what was wrong with me. And it was mostly my parents and the industry I was involved with. I had a huge chip on my shoulder. I was filled with self-pity. As I said, I was lost. And here William is telling me, I think you're an alcoholic. And if you ever want to come to a meeting with me, please call me. And he gave me a piece of paper. And I put it in my pocket. And I was angry. And I went home and I told my boyfriend, I said, guess who I saw today? I saw William. And guess what he said to me? He thinks I'm an alcoholic. And we both laughed and got drunk. And then when the boyfriend was shaking me awake in the morning and saying the detectives are here, you just have to use your imaginations, and we all have really good imaginations about that span between 14 and 24. It included at least 3 suicide attempts, turning the gas on once, laying down on a bridge and waiting for a truck to run me over in Ohio, and some horrible debacle after opening night at Yankee Stadium. And I didn't want to be in my body, and I didn't want to be on the planet, and it is alcoholism. And if anybody here counting days is feeling frightened by the gruesomeness of my story, please don't worry. You can hear many other stories. So if you identify, great, and if you don't worry. But that's where alcohol took me, in a very, very, very dark, ugly place. So I had to tell the detectives the story I had made up, and they were angry with me because I had changed it several times. And they were frustrated, and they threw me in the back of the cop car. I had pretended I had been abducted. I trashed my own apartment. This is me and alcohol. This is my breakup with alcohol and my starting to go out with you guys and the grace of God. Trashed my apartment, pulled my refrigerator with superhuman strength into the middle of the apartment, and trashed myself up to make it look like someone had kidnapped me, abducted me, and kidnapped me. And back when there were payphones up in Harlem, I was standing on the corner on a Harlem street with the payphone dangling, doing all of the voices of my abductors and me. And my poor boyfriend just on the other end of the phone. I can only imagine. That was it. That was my bottom. That was the end. And while they were driving me around in Harlem to look for my abductors, I started to have, and I get goosebumps to this day, they're all over me. I had a shift. I didn't have a white light experience, but because of William, I believe this. Because of you guys before him, those steps, there is a transmission. There really, really is. And it got me. The transmission got me. And I didn't hear an actual voice, but I felt the energy of, you can tell the truth. Just tell the truth now and this will all be over. And I couldn't do it to the detectives, but I got home and my boyfriend was crying and he said, you can lie to me about who did this. You can lie to the detectives about who did this to you. But go in the bathroom, get in the tub, and before you get in the tub, look in the mirror and look at yourself and try lying to yourself about who did this to you. I think William was right about you. I think you're probably an alcoholic. So before I came here to speak to you tonight, the other thing I have to tell you is this is one of the only places you can have a bad hair day and feel fine about it. I'm having a really bad hair day, and I don't care. But I looked in the mirror tonight because I thought I want to be able to tell these people like me, that I looked into the mirror and what I see in my eyes because of you guys and the steps and all of your kindness and tireless patience, I see light. I see a bright light when I look in my own eyes. Thank you. And I thought, let me just try to remember what it looks like to look in here tonight and what it must have looked like as a 24-year-old. So thank you for the light back on in my eyes. And I called William. I really felt like I was guided. I don't remember consciously doing anything. So this is where Grace had my back. I got the paper. He came in a cab. He saw me cut up and emaciated, Suzanne is here. She remembers me. He cried, put me in the cab, and took me to a Sunday night meeting, Central Park, Madison, something with those words in it. And, yeah, I don't remember. I had done something to my hearing that night up in Harlem. I couldn't hear. I had knocked my equilibrium out. Me and alcohol. That's where the relationship with alcohol took me. My dear friend really, really turned on me. And I was your age, a little older than you, Ben, and I remember looking up at the podium and seeing an old lady like me. And that's okay with me. I remember just walking in and seeing her. And it was sort of like, now I sort of look back and think it was like a sober night of the living dead. Everybody was just kind of walking around and coming towards me and handing me their phone number and smiling. And I was really frightened. I was really frightened, and I was also in awe. And they said, "Is this anyone's first time?" And William took my hand and shot it up into the air. And out came the words with ease. And so again, if this is not your experience, don't worry. You will probably hear your story if you keep coming. I said the words, "I'm an alcoholic." And you embraced me. You embraced me, and you do what is still done here today, as far as I know, in the Atlantic group, which is not done everywhere. It's also done in my home group. You took me out for fellowship. You wedged me against the wall in the diners, and I had to sit there, and mostly it just like looked like people's mouths were going like that. And I said I didn't have money. I did everything I could to try to get out of going to the diner, and it never worked because of what you're doing in here tonight. I mean, all the fun things that you described, all the ways that we get to live our lives. When you come in, you just don't really feel like, when I came in, I was in shock for quite a while that you were having fun. And as my sponsor likes to say, it's not a no drinking club. It's not just about not drinking. It's about getting what you were always meant to get. And I did a lot of service my first decade of sobriety. I did the steps. What I want to tell you about the big book is William bought me my copy my first night. He bought it for me, and I know you still do that for each other here. And he gave it to me, and I went home as a 24-year-old, and I got into the bed with the book, and I started reading it. And it kind of amazes me that as a 24-year-old in 1987, I understood what I was reading, and it spoke to me. I see you're very moved, and I appreciate that. I don't really know how that happened, so that's why I say grace, and that's why I say it's a mystery. But I understood enough to know whatever was going on in here with all of you, clean-smelling, smiling, clapping people, there was some connection between, oh my God, every single page. How can this be that they know this? How do they know all of this? This all makes sense to me. So I came. I came and I dove in. And what I want to say, so you hear the powerlessness, you hear the insanity. Step three, it was very easy for me to make that decision because of your love and kindness. For me, the decision was about, are you going to do what we're doing? Are you going to do the steps? I made a decision to turn my will and my life over. Okay, I will do that. And one other slightly funny story I like to tell is this summer that I got sober. And then I'll move. I'm telling you about the strength. So you heard my experience. Now you're hearing the strength. You are the strength. We are the strength. The Grateful Dead were playing the summer I got sober, and they were touring with Cranky Old Dylan. Oh, I just said his last name, but that doesn't matter. I hope not. Oh, shoot. Well, okay. Bob. The Dead were playing with Bob, and my boyfriend, it's too late, had backstage passes. He always had backstage passes to see the Dead. He was a surfer and played the guitar, and we were going backstage, and I was getting sober. And I turned to you. You can be the person that was the stranger then. And I said, I have 24 days and I'm going to see the Grateful Dead and going backstage to meet Bob. And she said, oh, no, you're not. And she said, you will be at a meeting on Friday night while your boyfriend, she was from the South, I remember her accent. And I said, okay. So that story is a window of, like what you said again, Ben, or someone said it, I don't have to want to do any of it, but I just do it. And that night, while he was going to see the Dead and Dylan, I was playing Trivial Pursuit on the Upper West Side with, like, gigantic hallucinogenic-looking bottles of orange soda and cheese doodles. And, you know, there was also Aria still alive and Danceteria. And me and my partner didn't know any answers to any questions. You know, every time it was our turn, I was like, you go. He's like, I don't know geography. You go. And I thought, this is my life. This is sobriety. This is it. And I just need to say that it got much better. Much, 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 much better. You said women with the women and men with the men, and I was a diehard tomboy, but I'm not anymore. I'm in my femininity, but I still love my tomboy. I learned how to make friends with women. I did the steps, and I went to EPRA, so if anyone is counting days, by some miracle, there's still funding in New York City, employment program for recovering alcoholics. I did a huge inventory on my cluelessness around skill in a profession. I got dragged out to a share, a summer share in the Hamptons. And I say dragged because I was rather fearful of people a lot of the way in. And my roommate convinced me to go. And the very first weekend there, I sat on the bed with folded arms crying and said, buy me out. Buy my share out. I don't care. I'll pay more. I'm not coming back. And that's another metaphor for you recovering alcoholics who have worked these steps would not let me go. You would not let me go. There are just a million vignettes I could say to you about me saying I can't do it and just starting to sort of figuratively sink and you saying, yes, you can. We did. She did. He did. Come on. So thank you very, very, very much. How much time do I have? I want to make sure to keep talking about the good stuff. So with 7 minutes left, I will move to this life of self-examination and prayer and meditation. And by going out to the summer share, getting dragged out there, I did meet my husband. He's sober also. I did not necessarily want to get married. I just thought I would travel a lot and have a bunch of lovers when I was drinking. And I am married 24 years together now in June, so that's a trip. Life beyond my wildest dreams. Really, my plans for me, I don't know what my life really may have ended up looking like, but I pray and meditate, and I want to talk to you, especially the people counting the days, about 85, 86, 87, 88. My sponsor put together this beautiful little booklet. And it's just about that. It's just this little booklet that you can take with you. And you guys in here know this. It's surprising to me that people... I spoke on Monday night and I talked about those pages, how as an alcoholic with my brain and my nervous system, I have to take the daily reprieve very seriously. I have to get up in the morning and do those pages. Great gigantic power that works through you. What do you want me to do today? And move my still around companions of worry and self-pity out of my way, thank you, so I can be of service. I worry about my siblings a lot. I'm the one that made it out, and it's also why I really liked listening to you as a 22-year-old. I give a nod to my parents who died very, very early from this disease and a nod to my beautiful little brother who died early from this disease because I know you've returned to source. And You know, just mentioning him, my little brother Adam, who overdosed, when I walked away from his coffin, the last thing in the world I wanted to do was go to a meeting. I actually wanted to, like, lay my head on his chest in the coffin and never get up. He had just bleached one of his curls, and he had his little earring in. I didn't want to go to an AA meeting, but I wanted to stay with him, you know, Myra? But you guys, where would I be without you? You taught me about smart feet. So my smart feet took me to the meeting. And I have to take care of my brain and my nervous system so I can help others. And I'll get close to the end now and say my very first female sponsor used to say to me, when we get in here, we hear amazing stuff from our sponsors, and to me, who was like, I'm like a reformed rebel rock and roller. I'm pretty reformed, right? Okay. She used to say the corniest stuff, and this one I just love, because back then I just thought, what the hell is she talking about? She said, whoops, I just said H-E-L-L, I'm sorry. She said, we're like Tiffany, beautiful Tiffany lamps. By the time you come in this program, those 12 steps and the people that are working them will rewire you and refacet you. And if you don't plug yourself in the morning and get this daily reprieve, you will stay in darkness. And alcoholism wants us dead, but it will settle for alone. So plug in. 85, 86, 87, 88. It's very simple. What do you want me to do? Please get these things out of my way. And then sit very, very quietly. And the other thing I want to say about anybody who's struggling with meditation, there's so many ways to do it nowadays. And I went to a lot of meditation meetings at a certain point in my sobriety. It's a great way to learn how to meditate. So you could look in the book and just find out where they are. There's also still, I hope they're still around, some really cool little chapels and churches in New York City where there are meetings. And meditating with a lot of us, the critical mass when you're meditating with other alcoholics can be very cool. So I'm going to look at you one more time and see if there's anything else. People who are new, please keep coming. Please keep coming, even if you feel bored. Or if you feel not so sure this is for you, don't give up. Just keep coming. And I'm kind of surprised I held it together tonight. Do I have a couple more minutes, or I'm kind of there? Okay, it's just a delicious feeling to be in front of all of you, because to me it feels mutual and not at all hierarchical. I love you very much, you sober people. Thank you for my sobriety.